Good afternoon. From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Juneau residents will have multiple opportunities this week to provide feedback about how and where they'd like to see changes to better the capital city's roadways for all users. The city is hosting three open house events to invite the public to learn more about its Safe Streets for All plan. In 2024, the city received federal grants from the Department of Transportation totaling more than $360,000 to create a plan for how to improve Juneau's roadway safety. The plan would specifically target the prevention of serious injuries and fatalities, including feedback from drivers, cyclists, walkers, and more. Phil Hipshen is an engagement specialist with the city's communications department and is coordinating the upcoming public meetings. They say community feedback will play a critical role in informing the priorities laid out in the plan.
All the input that we get from the community in those workshops will really help us go beyond data insights to better understand distinct and specific lived experience of residents and pedestrians and commuters.
Roads are important to Juneau residents, according to a recent survey of city budget priorities released in February. According to the results, 58% of respondents selected to prioritize winter maintenance of streets, roads, and bridges. The Safe Streets for All plan will include a data-driven review of all streets in the borough, both city streets and state streets like Egan, and especially those in the Lemon Creek area. Hipshen says the area is historically underserved and the city wants to bolster its connectivity. It will also take into account previously recorded crashes, historical trends, conditions, severity of injuries, and other data points. Hipshen says that while the data is important, it might exclude crucial safety details that can only be filled in by residents coming to the meetings and speaking up about them.
Providing that input really helps CBJ compile a report that is thorough and multidimensional.
The meetings will be held today at 5 p.m. at Zantikahini Campus in Lemon Creek, Tuesday at 5 p.m. at City Hall downtown, and Wednesday at 5 in the Mendenhall Valley Library. After months of on and off closures and limited services, the city's recycling center will be back to operating at full capacity and regular hours starting tomorrow. Stuart Ashton, the city's recycling manager, thanked the public for its patience while the center was often closed for repairs.
This recycling center being a cornerstone of waste in Juneau for decades now, not only do people rely on it, they expect it. The amount of phone calls and then people checking in that really this is part of their weekly waste stuff on the way to Costco.
The recycling center had been dealing with mechanical issues since late December after Juneau was hit with back-to-back record-breaking snowstorms. In the interim, the city had asked residents to hold onto their recyclable material while it fixed the recycling baler. The baler is the most critical piece of equipment that allows the center to operate. It's a machine that compresses the recyclables into blocks, which are then shipped by barge to recycling facilities in Seattle that repurpose the materials. For a few weeks, the center's services were limited as staff repaired and tested the baler. Ashton says the baler is now fixed, and the center is able to operate regular hours at full capacity. That means it'll once again accept plastics number 1 and 2, glass, tin cans, aluminum cans, mixed paper, and cardboard. The city contracts with Waste Management to operate its recycling program in Lemon Creek. Waste Management is the private company that runs Juneau's only landfill, which is estimated to run out of space in the next decade. Ashton says recycling plays a major role in diverting material from the landfill and extending its life.
We all know that the landfill is going to be closing eventually and there something else has to happen. And but yeah, that's pretty much why it's so important is that it's part of all waste in Juneau and it's how costs stay down and how whatever the new path will be, it's a cornerstone of it.
Ashton says moving forward, the city plans to have more oversight at the facility to ensure proper maintenance of the baler and prevent events like this from happening again. The recycling center will be open at regular hours starting tomorrow. It operates Tuesdays through Saturdays from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And a bill meant to protect Alaskans from drinking water contaminated with PFAS had its first committee hearing last week. PFAS, often called forever chemicals, since they don't break down naturally, are toxic and known to cause severe health problems, including cancer. KTOO's Alex Solomon reports.
Senate Bill 219 would limit the amount of PFAS allowed in Alaska's drinking water to levels announced by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in 2024, which follows the science on health effects. It would also require the state to test public drinking water sources annually and to provide residents with clean water if they test above those legal limits. This comes 2 years after the Alaska legislature passed a law ending the use of PFAS in firefighting foams, which is the leading source of PFAS in the environment, especially at airports and military bases. PFAS are also found in a variety of products like nonstick cookware, waterproof fabrics, and food packaging. Jenna Calhoun is a staffer for Senator Scott Kawasaki, who introduced the bill. She said at the Senate State Affairs Committee hearing that the bill would expand the responsibilities of the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation.
Well, what it does is it establishes an annual expectation for the DEC to test all public water systems in the state for PFAS. That way, they are continually monitoring our drinking water to ensure that it's safe for Alaskan citizens.
Health issues linked to PFAS include several types of cancer, reproductive problems, and immune system issues. DEC has logged PFAS at hundreds of sites around the state, including in Gustavus, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. Calhoun said the cost to provide clean drinking water would be borne by the party responsible for spilling PFAS or the chemical manufacturer. Janet Nielsen has lived in Gustavus for about 30 years. In 2018, the Alaska Department of Transportation alerted residents that PFAS was found in groundwater around the Gustavus Airport, which is located upstream from neighborhoods. Researchers tested her kid's blood as part of a study published in 2022 that traced PFAS contamination at the airport through the drinking water and into residents' bodies. Nielsen testified at the hearing that her two kids were exposed to PFAS at school.
Without SB 219, Alaska is effectively telling its citizens that levels up to 70 parts per trillion in their water are safe, and they are not. We know that. And I know now that my family was not so lucky. Even though we didn't live inside the plume, my kids were drinking contaminated, poisoned water at their preschool and at their school at 40 parts per trillion.
Right now, Alaska does not have enforceable drinking water standards for PFAS, but recommends action at 70 parts per trillion. Many wells in Gustavus tested at or above that in 2024, the last time testing was done. DOT provides clean drinking water to some properties there. Those levels, 40 to 70 parts per trillion, are far higher than EPA standards announced a couple of years ago, which capped levels for some PFAS chemicals at between 4 and 10 parts per trillion, after a slew of studies found serious health impacts even at low concentrations. For reference, one part per trillion is like a single drop of water in 20 Olympic-sized swimming pools. But under the Trump administration, the EPA announced its intent to rescind or delay those new standards. Nielsen said that means the state should take the lead on protecting Alaskans. Several states have enacted laws on PFAS in drinking water. DOT and DEC estimate that enforcement would cost nearly $19 million in the first year, according to the bill's fiscal notes. Pamela Miller is the executive director and senior scientist at Alaska Community Action on Toxics, a nonprofit that advocates for PFAS regulations. She testified at the hearing.
People do continue to be exposed to dangerous levels of PFAS, and this failure to act puts people at long-term risk.
Miller said she supports the bill, except for the section on using thermal remediation, since some studies have shown the technique doesn't always work. She also said the nonprofit has distributed more than 100 PFAS water test kits to communities across the state. A companion bill, House Bill 235, has been introduced by Representative Carolyn Hall. The bills are written to address public drinking water sources. Nielsen, the parent who raised her kids in Gustavus, says she hopes that will include private wells. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And the fate of a closely watched budget bill in the Alaska legislature is back up in the air. That's after House Republicans declined to back a supermajority vote that would have funded the bill from savings. Republicans argued higher than expected oil prices, due in part to the war in Iran, which would negate the need for a savings draw. And that's true if new state revenue projections released Friday hold up. But as Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, lawmakers in the Democrat-dominated House and Senate majority caucuses say they're not so sure they will.
Let me get to the bottom line up front. It is not clear when this time-sensitive supplemental budget bill will clear the House and Senate and head to Governor Mike Dunleavy's desk. But if you ask the House Minority Whip Justin Ruffridge, a sold-out Republican, it should be as soon as possible.
I think that that bill should be back on the floor Monday morning. Frankly, I think it should be back on the floor today.
At stake is funding for disaster relief, wildfire suppression, and $70 million in federal match funding, which the construction industry says is critical to ensure Alaskans don't lose valuable time in the short summer season, or worse, their jobs. On Thursday, all 40 members of the House voted to approve the $373 million budget bill. All but one minority Republican, though, voted against funding it from savings. That's because Republicans had been in touch with the governor's budget office and were quite confident they'd have enough money to cover the bill without a savings draw. Oil prices have shot up dramatically since the U.S. and Israel started striking Iran 2 weeks ago. And according to a new forecast from the State Revenue Department released on Friday, that means the state will have $500 million more than it thought this past December, and an extra $500 million in next year's budget.
this revenue forecast may be even greater than they foresaw.
That's Representative Andy Josephson, an Anchorage Democrat and a senior budgeter in the House. He says the higher revenue projections could functionally backfire on the minority. It's pretty simple. Drawing from the Constitutional Budget Reserve takes a three-quarters supermajority. But if you have the money...
Where it puts them politically is we don't need a supermajority.
Not now, and critically, not at the end of the session. But not so fast, says House Speaker Bryce Edgman.
It's not extra revenue at this point. It's projected to be extra revenue.
And for now, Edgman says the safest thing to do is to pursue another draw from savings.
You would take money out of the state's savings accounts, and if this increase in oil money is realized, we'll then replenish the money that we've taken out of the accounts, and all would be funded.
It is really hard to project oil prices, especially when it's not clear how much longer the war will last. And the State Department of Revenue's forecast makes that clear. Here's an example. The Revenue Department says it's 80% sure that the price of oil from July of this year to June of next year will average somewhere between $45 and $130 a barrel.
That means they don't know where oil's going to be. They're just throwing a dart.
That's Senator Burt Stedman, a Sitka Republican and a co-chair of the powerful Senate Finance Committee. And he's with Edgman. Draw from savings now and replenish it if the money materializes.
We need to be a little cautious. And when that ends and they straighten that out, I would expect oil prices to reverse course and come back down substantially and very quickly.
But House Minority Leader Delina Johnson, a Palmer Republican, says she's confident there's at least enough sitting in state coffers right now to cover much of the need. Basically, she says the last forecast was a bit too pessimistic.
There's a large amount of money that's been accrued over the year that was sitting there that wasn't in our current forecast.
But Edgman, the House Speaker, is not convinced. He says he doesn't plan to bring the budget bill back up in the House until he's confident he has the three-quarter supermajority needed to access the savings account. And that means, for now, the bill remains in limbo. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And you are listening to KTOO. For more news, go to ktoo.org.